Support for Radio Boston comes from Hadestown at the Box Center Wang Theater, Broadway's Tony and Grammy-winning Best Musical, an epic celebration of music, togetherness, and hope, raves Forbes. Playing April 23rd through April 28th. Buy your tickets today at boxcenter.org.
Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks. As global health workers fight to control an Ebola outbreak in West Africa, are there lessons from the Boston 1721 smallpox epidemic? The outbreak centuries ago infected half of this city's 11,000 residents, killing more than 400 people in just 1 month. But then an African slave shared a radical idea with his master, the prominent minister, Cotton Mather, that would eventually lead to successful inoculations that brought the epidemic under control. Ted Widmer wrote recently about the history in the Boston Globe, and he joins us now from New York. Widmer is a historian at Brown University, a former speechwriter for President Clinton, and the author of numerous books on American history. And Ted Widmer, welcome back to Radio Boston. It's good to have you.
Thank you, Anthony.
I want to ask you first about the history of smallpox in Boston, because it was a disease that hit the city in a number of waves. The one you write about was in 1721. So tell us about that outbreak and what made it different.
That was an unusually bad one, but Bostonians had known smallpox throughout their first century, including the very first year, 1630. But in 1721, a really powerful epidemic broke out. It began in April 1721 with a ship that came from the West Indies, and ships were coming more and more into Boston Harbor from greater distances, and so they were carrying all kinds of new people, and some of those people carried diseases, and there were some attempts to prevent disease from getting in, but they weren't very sophisticated, and smallpox got into the city, and once it got in, no one knew how to stop it at all, and for the better part of a year, the citizens lived under terror that they might get the disease and die.
Right. And 400 deaths in 1 month. I mean, when you consider the city only had a population of 11,000, I mean, extraordinarily high numbers. So then comes this extraordinary idea from an African slave named Onesimus. His master is the prominent Boston minister, Cotton Mather. So tell us about Onesimus and what he suggested.
Well, the whole story is complicated, beginning with the complexity of the fact that a leading figure of religion and culture was a slave owner. But slavery, as we now know better than we used to, was practiced in New England as well as the rest of North America. And Mather was actually given this slave by his congregation. And yet they had an interesting relationship in which Onesimus obviously had a voice. Mather recorded in his journal things that he said to him. He called him a pretty intelligent fellow. And when he asked him if he had had smallpox, he recorded his answer, which was yes and no, which is already a very, very interesting answer. And he told the story of how in Africa he'd been inoculated and he had a light case of smallpox that made him immune to it afterwards. And Mather was fascinated. He was a kind of amateur scientist. He had thought about becoming a doctor as a young man. And he was really, really interested in getting his knowledge to London, which for him was the center of the world, and impressing people in England that you could live in Boston on the edge of the known universe and still have something relevant to say to England. And so he found this knowledge coming to him from an African to be highly relevant to his own ambition of being an important person to scientists in London. And he began to exchange letters with scientists in London. And it was right at the right moment because they were beginning to hear other accounts from around the world, including Turkey, that inoculation worked. And throughout Western Europe, no one really had any idea how to stop smallpox. It devastated populations. And so this was on the cutting edge of medicine, and it was coming not only from a remote city, Boston, but from a slave owned in Boston. So it was doubly distant information, but highly relevant.
Really, really fascinating. Now, this was, as it turned out, hugely controversial as well, and you write that at one point, an opponent of Cotton Mather threw a kind of crude bomb into his home. What prompted the controversy to boil over like this?
Well, this was really a hot situation in every way. I mean, it was throughout the summer, tempers were boiling over. And Mather was out there advancing a theory that no one knew would work or not. Mm. And it was really shocking to hear about a doctor. Only one doctor in town would perform the inoculation. He started on one of his own children and two Africans who belonged to him also, and they survived. But you can imagine how high emotions were running, and people thought all kinds of things. They thought that inoculation might actually spread smallpox or other diseases, and there was some grounds to think that. They thought it might kill people, and there was some grounds to think that also. And everyone also thought it was tampering with God's judgment, and that was something of the highest possible relevance in a very religious city in 1721.
Yeah, this idea that smallpox was a bit of a mystery, and one of the explanations was that it was divine retribution for personal failings, right?
Absolutely. And people like Cotton Mather had been saying that for a long time. And in fact, Cotton Mather had said things like that not too many, well, about 20 years earlier, 30 years earlier with the Salem witchcraft crisis of 1692, when he didn't quite advocate, but he didn't quite oppose the use of spectral evidence, kind of, you know, imaginary evidence. And so it was very much in the air, like the bacteria of smallpox itself, the idea that whatever happened to you was because God wanted it to happen to you.
Right.
So to use science to fight against it was difficult for people. And everything in this story is a little bit reversed. You have the man of God advocating for science.
So interesting. So how well did it actually work, the inoculations, and why did it take, another 75 years for an actual vaccine to be developed?
It worked quite well. Of 287 inoculations performed that year, 281 people survived and were immune afterwards. So a very high success rate. And the rate of doing nothing was much more dangerous. You had a 1 in 40 chance of surviving if you were inoculated. You had a 1 in 7 chance of surviving if you did nothing.
Yeah. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
They just didn't know. Inoculation was very crude. It was just taking a little bit of pus, basically, and rubbing it into an open wound. That's all it was, pus from someone who had smallpox. And the science wasn't there yet, and it wasn't until the very end of the 18th century in England that a scientist, Edward Jenner, figured out how to vaccinate with cowpox and to do it in a much safer way with a very high success rate. So they just needed almost 100 more years to figure out the right way to do it.
You know, in the piece you wrote in the Boston Globe recently, there was one line in here that struck me. It's a wonderful piece, but one line struck me in particular. The story of how Boston began to overcome smallpox illustrates the strife that epidemics can cause, but also the encouraging notion that humans can communicate remedies as quickly as they communicate germs. I love that idea. And I guess sort of almost by way of closing with you, I just wanted to ask you, you know, thinking about the current strife in West Africa around Ebola, you know, what are the lessons from this epidemic in Boston 3 centuries ago that might apply?
I think to avoid a rush to judgment is the first one, to be as calm as we can be until solutions manifest themselves, to think that solutions might come from the very same places that are affected the most, specifically not to give up on Africa, to continue to give Africa all of our support, our medical training, our investment, if possible, tourism money, but to just keep Africa on our mental map, but to listen to people and to be observant. And the most moving part of the story to me is that Mather, who had made so many mistakes and had so many enemies and is an unlikable guy in many ways, took the time to listen to Onesimus. And Onesimus really had something very vital to communicate. And I'm happy to say that Onesimus was later able to purchase his freedom. And this is a story with a lot of second chances. Mather made the most of his second chance. Onesimus was able to buy his freedom later. And Benjamin Franklin, who's a bit player in this story. He was the younger brother of a journalist who was tormenting Mather all summer, attacking him. He later needed a loan desperately as a young man in London, and he borrowed the money from the doctor who was performing the inoculations, who had been taken to London to be given membership in England's most prestigious intellectual society. And so he gave young Ben Franklin a second chance, and everybody got a second chance, and the world was better off for that.
World was better off indeed. Ted Widmer is a historian at Brown University. You can find a link to his Boston Globe piece on the Boston smallpox epidemic at radioboston.org. Ted, thank you so much for bringing this story to us. We're very grateful.
Thank you so much.